Good morning. First of all, I want to say I was really pleased with the attendance and the program that we had last Friday at Drake University on the teacher and administrator leadership. This morning, Lieutenant Governor and I are announcing a new statewide conference to be held to prevent bullying in Iowa. We believe we can and we must do more to stand up against bullying. A most recent Iowa youth survey of students in three different grades, half of them said they have reported being bullied in some way. Most youngsters witness the bullying of their peers sooner or later. That's why we will hold the Governor's Bullying Prevention Summit on Tuesday, November 27th in Des Moines. At the summit, we will hear from state and national experts about how to combat bullying both online and offline. Registration will be open to the public starting in September, so please consider attending. More details on the registration and the schedule will be available in the coming weeks, and we will keep the public informed. Dr. Paul Gosman, superintendent of the Sioux City Schools, the summit's morning keynote speaker, will talk about how schools alone can't prevent bullying, that it takes the entire community. Our luncheon speaker at the summit is Rosalind Wiseman, whose book became the basis for the movie Mean Girls. Iowans have a well-deserved reputation for being good neighbors. Let's leverage that tradition to put an end to bullying, because all children deserve to feel safe at school. Now, I want to turn the podium over to Lieutenant Governor Kim Reynolds.
Well, good morning, and thank you, Governor Branstad. You know, some people may ask, why is so much attention being paid to bullying right now? Awareness is growing. With what used to be excused as kids being kids is more harmful than previously realized. Making threats, spreading rumors, excluding classmates, and hurting someone physically or verbally are examples of behavior that can scar the children who are targeted, even potentially creating risk factor for suicide. Meanwhile, cyberbullying presents many new challenges. We can no longer discount bullying as a normal phase of a childhood or hope someone else will deal with this problem. Let's take the steps needed to stop it, which starts by realizing that cultural and perhaps policy changes are needed inside and outside the schools. Many Iowa communities, including Sioux City, have already begun this work, and some of them will present their strategies that will be held at the summit. It is now my pleasure to introduce to the podium Dr. Paul Gosman to give his thoughts on bullying for the up-and-coming summit.
Thank you very much. Sioux City is the fourth largest district in Iowa with 14,000 students in about 30 different school facilities. I readily agreed to participate in this bully prevention conference because we are a district that has walked the journey of implementing progressive programming for bully prevention activities. The Sioux City Community School District has enjoyed a 12-year partnership with the Wade Institute for Violence Prevention. The Wade Institute was created by the founder of Gateway Computers, Ted Waite, who with other members of his family are graduates of our fine schools. The Waite Foundation partnered with our district to provide supports for progressive programming in bully prevention, including funding, curriculum, and training for staff and students over our relationship. Our journey became the most compelling when we were approached by our partners at the Waite Institute to participate in a national documentary on bullying in the American schools. Originally, our participation was to highlight some of the progressive programs and significant successes of our work to prevent bullying in our schools. The end result of this is this national documentary, now titled Bully, that is a compelling, emotional, and challenging documentary that looks at the challenges of bullying in American schools through the lens of those who are victims of bullying. While we are not particularly proud of all that is presented in the documentary related to the Sioux City schools, and we acknowledge that the work of art shows you some of our dirty laundry related to the challenges of bullying in our schools, I willingly step forward to discuss the journey that we are walking to make a difference in our community regarding the challenges of bullying in our schools. I'm proud of the Sioux City Community School District School Board for having the courage to engage in the national discourse on the most important topic of this day. Students must absolutely feel safe to have a chance to be successful in school, and at times, we as an entire culture fail our students on this basic need and right. We continue to believe in the importance of community dialogue on the challenges of bullying in the American society. Our participation in this documentary has created some of the most rich and meaningful discussion in our community about what the entirety of the community can and should do to assist and support schools in our efforts to prevent bullying. That is our perspective, that bullying is best defeated by prevention and with the entire community. We have regularly said that the Sioux City Community School District is not unique because we have bullying in our schools, but we want to become unique by becoming a school district that has helped to make a difference in this nation. We must all recognize that the challenge of bullying is pervasive in our entire society. It's bigger than a single person, staff member, school building, or school district. It is a part of our culture, and our culture must change. I look forward to my participation in this event because I regret that any student in any district has a less than positive experience as a part of their education. We are committed to creating meaningful change for our future. Thank you.
Superintendent Gosman, thank you very much. Also, there will be a website that goes live today, preventbullying.iowa.gov. So that's a website where you can get more information, and we'd be glad to respond to your questions on this subject.
Governor, yes. One of the problems with bullying in this day and age is cyberbullying.
Right.
But how far should the school district's authority lead into somebody's home?
Well, those are good questions, and hopefully those we can try to get some answers. We've also met with the Iowa school administrators on this issue, and so there are questions of how far, you know, schools and school administrators can go in dealing with this subject. We know it goes beyond school. Today, with all the technology that's available and all the activity that goes on, you know, cell phones and iPads and all of that information, all of that technology, we need to try to find an effective way to deal with it. I don't know anybody has the complete answer to that, and it's relatively new, but we know this has kind of exacerbated the situation, and it needs to be addressed. So this is one of the subjects, and you know, so we'll have legal people as well as school people and just parents and people that are interested in trying to do something about it to see if we can come up with, and if there may be a need to make some changes in the law as well, but these are things that we hope to be able to address through this summit. I don't know if there's anybody else would like to add. Well, I think we've had, you know, we've had suicides, we've had some significant increase with cyberbullying here in recent years. All of those things, I think, led us to believe that we needed to have a high-profile summit and bring together some state and national leaders. We're proud of what Sioux City is doing. There's other school districts that are doing significant things as well. So we can learn from each other. We can share some of the experiences and get some a national perspective as well.
Dr. Gosman, did you view that documentary? Did you feel a sense of personal failure?
Oh, you know, certainly in the documentary you will see us fail one of our students. I have personally watched the documentary about 15 times now. In numerous locations about our country. And each time that I watch that documentary, I pick up additional things. It's very important to point out that the documentary is one that covers the issue of bullying from the perspective of those who are bullied. I think it's very important for us to talk about what our community can do as a part of the solution, to work not only with those who are bullied, because then you're looking at the reactive measures, but I think we really need to study those who bully so that we can do all possible to prevent bullying in our schools.
You said you watched it several times. Mm-hmm. What was the thinking when you first saw it, and how did that evolve?
Well, the documentary is a series of vignettes of five different school districts throughout our nation. And so each time that I watch it, I'm able to pick up some different things from each of the different school districts that are there. And it's really, what it's done for us is it's created some really meaningful discussions in our community. Because we have to recognize that bullying is not simply something that exists in schools. It's in our shopping malls, our sporting events, our churches. I mean, we certainly have all kinds of challenges in our society, and the degradation of civility in society is a part of that. So we must together work to figure out how to solve this challenge so that we're appropriately modeling proper behavior for our children.
Did you feel a sense of failure when you saw it?
When I saw it, of course, I noted that we failed one of our students. But we have continued to walk the path that's important, not to just recognize that where we failed, but to work together as a community to get up again and to take another shot at this, so that we can do all that is possible to make every child's experience in school as positive as possible.
Steps that you've taken since you've seen this document, mm-hmm. Do you feel more confident that this sort of activity is less likely?
Absolutely. Yeah, like just a quick example, one of the things you'll see in the documentary is some challenges of bullying on a bus. Since that time, all of our school buses in our district have high quality, multiple camera, multiple microphone, audio and video systems installed. And we now have staff members who are paid simply to watch bus video, not simply to respond to bullying when it's reported to us, but to look for instances where behavior was challenged in a bit, and to develop that relationship with the school building and the school building to the parents and the community, so that we can work together to mitigate those challenges before they become too severe.
I want to say something in support of Sioux City, and you know, I remember when we had the crash of Flight 232, and the community's response to that, people lined up to donate blood. We had a tremendous rescue mission that went on there, and then I saw last year with the flood and all the, including students that volunteered, 600. Community people that helped with it. So. I guess I don't want to draw a negative conclusion about Sioux City, because there's a lot of good people in Sioux City, and I think it's a real credit that the community and the school district is taking a leadership position in addressing this problem. The problem is certainly not unique to them. It's all over, and that's the reason why we felt a summit like this and also highlighting what Sioux City is doing to deal with it is a good way to share their experience with others that hopefully can help other people as well.
Governor Branstad, I've noticed a trend among people who advocate for bullying prevention that they focus on particular groups of students. Are you just going to focus on the problem at large, or are you going to target groups of students?
This is going to be comprehensive, and we're going to try to look at all aspects of it and not just focus on a particular group or particular instance. But, you know, we recognize it's not – obviously, a lot of it happens at school, but the whole cyberbullying has become an issue too. That's certainly something we want to address. So, and we know it's not limited to one group or one age level either. That will be addressed, but that's not the only thing that will be addressed. It's going to be a comprehensive view of bullying, and we hope by bringing in both national and state experts and getting many different perspectives, it can be something that can be helpful to all students.
Oh, I think the challenge of bullying needs the extra attention, and I think we've got a series of things that we'll need to do. Certainly, we want to work with our students who we identify as more likely to bully on respect for all of those around them. We want to work on developing that sense of resiliency within all of our students, that sense of pride in who you are. And so it's a component of a comprehensive strategy, as the governor has said, for making a difference in this arena.
You know, part of it is my mother, and I had a lot of great teachers that taught me that everyone deserves to be treated with respect and dignity. And that's part of what we want to do, is get that message across, that everyone, regardless of who they are or how different they might be or whatever, needs to be treated with respect and dignity. Yes, ma'am. Well, first of all, I'm just really proud that we're able to get somebody of her caliber and experience to be director of the Department of Revenue and Finance. And I appreciate the fact that she has young children and she has a husband in Davenport. And we made it clear that that's fine. And she's a hard worker and puts in plenty of hours. And I don't think people should have to live in Des Moines to work in state government. In fact, we have a lot of people that commute from many places, not maybe most of them not quite as far as her, but I think it's important that people understand that to be in a leadership position in state government, they do not have to be a permanent resident of the Des Moines area. And I think she's doing a great job, and Lieutenant Governor and I were over there and visited the department and seen a lot of the changes they've made. They're really trying to modernize the department, become more and more of a paperless system, and I think she has put in place some really good reforms and improvements, and they've done it by using technology more effectively. There's still a lot more that needs to be done, and she'd be the first to tell you that, because a lot of the computer systems we have over there are probably 25, 30 years old and need to be changed, and we've gone to the point now where we used to have most of the returns filed by paper, and now it's over 90%. I think it's over 90% that's it's filed electronically.
And on that note, do you think that she should get the full amount reimbursed for if she's not, in fact, living in Des Moines?
Well, you know, she comes from a very successful job with a very well-respected law firm. I think the Lane & Waterman law firm that she came from is the oldest law firm west of the Mississippi River and one of the finest law firms in our state. So she's made a significant sacrifice from what she could make in private practice to take on this responsibility. But I also know from my meeting with her very recently at a progress review session and that she is very enthused about the job. And she's excited to be part of the policy making that's addressing some of the challenges that we have to try to make Iowa, you know, to create 200,000 jobs and raise family incomes by 25%. And we know that tax policies have an impact on business decision makers. And she's very cognizant of that. And she's a very important part of our team.
Governor, you've got a fundraiser tomorrow night. Could you describe that a little bit and tell us what your goal is?
We don't have a fundraiser tomorrow night. Actually, I'm going to be at Okoboji tomorrow night, and we're going to be going to some charitable fundraisers. Yeah. Yeah, so at one time there was, I think, maybe some thought of us having a fundraiser, but we are not having a fundraiser. But I am going to be going with a friend to a number. I think there's one or two charitable events we're going to up there in Okoboji tomorrow night. So, and then there's also a meeting on Wednesday morning with a group of students, right?
Entrepreneurial.
But anyway, the schedule maybe didn't get updated, but the event we're going to is not a fundraiser for us. It might be a charitable fundraiser for another group.
Summit in Okoboji. Yeah.
Okay, so it's for the entrepreneurial event, and there's a group of. And this is something that I think Toby Shine has helped put together with students, and I'll be at that on Wednesday morning. But the fundraiser is for that project, Margaret.
And then you're going to the art festival,
and then we're going to the art festival as well. So we're going to get all kinds of good charitable stuff done when we're up there.
And it was already scheduled.
You're talking about that. I can, as usual, you know, these schedules, I put my schedule together well in advance. Yeah. And so, I certainly am supportive of that, but I just will not be able to be there personally in attendance because we'll be at Okoboji doing those two charitable events, but we'll be there in spirit.
Yeah.
The Lieutenant Governor and I will both be in Okoboji,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So will there be a full court press at that event to convince Governor Romney that his position on wind isn't the right one for Iowa, or is that already done?
Well, I'm hopeful that, first of all, with regard to the wind situation, I can understand why they've been very critical of the Obama administration for the way they wasted money on the stimulus, and a lot of that money went to places like Solyndra and was not a good use of taxpayers' money. However, the wind tax credit is something that started way before Obama ever became president. Senator Grassley was one of the leaders in it. I've been a strong supporter of it from the beginning, and we'd like to, I and Senator Grassley and many others would like to be able to talk personally with Governor Romney about the benefit of at least maintaining that for a period of time. We don't think that needs to be permanent, but we do think getting that industry launched has been good, and I talked to Steve King about that yesterday. And the cost of generating electricity by wind has gone down dramatically from what it was when we started this back in Iowa, was a leader, and I signed legislation in 1983 on the renewable electric energy. In fact, 24 states have copied what we did, plus the renewable fuel standard, which has been very successful, and the federal tax credit has also been helpful. And when the tax credit has expired in the past, we've seen the growth in this industry dramatically reduced. So we think it needs to be extended again, and we're hopeful that indeed the Congress will, and future President Romney will sign it. He's a busy guy, but I want to get up. Well, I'm going to. I think this is important. I think it's important to Iowa. I think it's important to America to reduce our dependency on foreign oil. And I feel that way about the, as well as the renewable fuels standard as well. These are things that are important that we not lose just because we have some other issues that are facing us at the present time. We've been working hard over the last several decades to try to reduce our dependency on foreign oil and have more domestic production, and that includes renewable energy, and Iowa is a leader in that. We're a leader in ethanol, we're a leader in biodiesel, we're a leader in wind energy, and we want to maintain the momentum that's behind that and not lose that just because of the drought or some of the other issues that we have in the short term.
Do livestock farmers, though, have a point in asking for that to be suspended because of the high cost of grain to feed their livestock?
Well, let me explain something. Okay. This is the 2010-2011 crop year. Total corn acreage was 88.2. Million acres. Corn ethanol, the gross amount was 32.6. But DDGs, of course, come out of that, and that is great livestock feed. Mm-hmm. So that's 9.4. And then DDG also for soybean acre correction, that's another 8.7 from that. So the net amount of corn ethanol acres is only 14.5 out of 88.2. That's 16% of the net corn acres used for ethanol. You know what's happened since we hit this drought? Ethanol production is reduced 12%. So it's down to about 2% or 4%. I don't know. It's a small percentage. And the truth is, and this is what a lot of the folks on the East Coast and West Coast that don't know anything about food production, the corn that we raise is not sweet corn. It is not human consumption. It goes to a livestock. It goes to many other purposes. But the truth of the matter is they've been sold a bill of goods and saying that if you suspend all ethanol production, the impact on the price of corn is very small. It is more the drought and all these other factors that have gone into that. So we just got to get the facts out and not let people be bamboozled by misinformation, by people that don't have any knowledge of where food comes from and how it's produced and the impact this has had. Now, everybody's in this together. I can tell you the ethanol industry is losing money. We've seen ethanol plants close already. We've seen production reduced. We know livestock producers are running into challenges, and we've seen liquidation of some of the sow herds and whatever. We also know international demand has dropped because of the high price. But also, farmers are very resilient and make adjustments and changes, and we'll get through this. Plus, we were just in South America. It's winter down there. Now, they'll gear up, and they'll, just as we did when they had the drought down there in the last couple of years, and we increased our production to offset that, and they'll hopefully be able to increase their production to offset our loss. So we're really partners in working together on this, and I just think we need to do a better job of informing and educating people so they don't panic over something like this drought situation and do something stupid like reducing our production of alternative fuels that have made a difference in reducing our dependency on foreign oil. And we are moving in the right direction, finally, but we have a long ways to go to really become energy self-sufficient in this country, and we can if we don't forget what got us where we are. Well, my position has always been, as it was in the 2010 election, that this retention of judges is a decision to be made by the voters, and that I should not try to influence people's decision, that they ought to look at each individual justice based on their record and determine whether or not they, as an individual voter, think they should be retained. That's the position I took in 2010. That's the position I continue to take. I just think the voters, and I have a lot of respect for Iowa voters, and their ability to intelligently review and determine who should be retained and who shouldn't. I would point out in the last election, the district court judges were all retained. There were three members of the Supreme Court that weren't.
But that's across purposes with your party.
Well, first of all, everybody has the right of free speech and whatever, but I think it's still up to the individual voter to make that decision. Okay. And I'm not going to try to influence the decision that's made by voters on the issue of retention. It's under our Constitution, it's a right given to the voters. And I think the voters ought to make a thoughtful and intelligent decision on the issue of retention for each and every judge.
Governor, on the vice presidential search, not to suggest that you have any inside information, but could you just speculate for us?
Well,
she didn't hit for top one.
It's very difficult to speculate in a situation like that. I would say, you know, I've always been partial to governors because I think the executive experience that you have as governor, and I think this is something Romney has experienced both in business and as a governor, and he also helped rescue the Olympics, the Winter Olympics that were in trouble in Salt Lake City. And I'm sure that I have confidence he'll choose somebody that he feels is ready to be president and somebody that has the kind of executive experience that we need. But there's several governors, and, you know, there's others that aren't governor, too, that I think could be a very strong potential vice presidential candidates. But I don't think it would be good to start naming names because I may leave somebody out, and I don't want to offend anybody.
Final point.
Well, he didn't consult with me, and I guess my feeling is he has the right, as every citizen has the right, to express their opinion on these issues.
Great, thank you.
It is a voter decision, and it should be up to the voters to decide, and I have confidence in Iowa voters in making their decision.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.